At Cool Air Products, we developed AC Smart Seal Quick Shot with professionals in mind. It's the only product on the market that's 3-in-1, with sealant, lubricant, and UV dye all in a single application. It's non-toxic, non-flammable, 100% safe to the touch, eco-friendly, and compatible with all refrigerants. It's a safe solution option, backed by years of R&D, Intertech tested, and has sealed millions of leaks. AC Smart Seal, the professional's choice.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the podcast. We got some interesting discussion happening here. There's a panel of four of us. I have John Pastorello, Mike Pastorello, and Ashley Linz from Refrigeration Technologies. Now, Ashley just recently joined their crew, and we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff here. We're going to talk about Nylog and how it homogenizes with PoE oil very, very quickly. We're going to talk about coil cleaning and the difference between like really caustic coil cleaners and some of the stuff that Viper has. You know those symbols on the rooftops and condensing units that say use water only? Well, we're going to talk about that as well. And do we clean coils from the inside outside or outside inside? We're going to have that discussion. And, you know, it's just a really good discussion with some good people in the trades, a really good down-to-earth company. John used to be an HVAC tech in the field, and he's a chemist. And he makes products for our trade based on his life living in both fields. So pretty cool discussion, guys, coming up right now. This is the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. I'm your host, Gary McCready. This podcast is sponsored by Master, and they recently jumped on the April airline, those 5-inch filters that open up like an accordion and slide in on their own track. A couple of things here. They reduce bypassing particulate that can go around the filter and end up in the system. They have a better particulate capture rate, like on the MERV 13, and they have more surface area than like a 1-inch. So you're actually going to have less resistance, airflow resistance through the 5-inch. A lot of people think it's the opposite, but you get less air resistance through the 5-inch. So check out Master, master.ca. This podcast is sponsored by Cintas. Now, if you're looking for blue-collar type uniforms for your blue-collar team, go to cintas.com/HVAC know-it-all and check out what they got to offer. I mean, they got all kinds of stuff. You want to be comfortable, you want to look good, and you want to be safe as well and wear the right type of uniform. So check out cintas.com/HVAC know-it-all. If you want to suit up your blue-collar team.
Welcome to the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. Recorded from a basement somewhere in Toronto, Canada. Your host and HVAC tech, Gary McCready, will take you on a deep dive into the industry, discussing all things HVAC. From storytelling to technical discussion. Enjoy the show.
John, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Here I am.
Okay, so I seen this little trick on a podcast that you did with Zach Ciotta and
yes.
Ralph Wolf, and there was a big commotion over Nylog at that point in time, and you did this demonstration with some PoE oil in a beaker, and you squeeze some Nylog in it, mix it around, and within a couple of minutes, it was like a full homogenized liquid. You couldn't see any separations whatsoever. So
correct.
For this audience, for my audience, would you be willing to perform that trick again? I mean, I see you got your stuff in front of you there.
Yes, most definitely. First of all, Nylog is PoE oil. It just happens to have a much higher viscosity, and the viscosity is sticky and tacky and gooey. Now, since it's an oil, there's no solids. And the only thing that would plug up the system would be a solid material. And there is no solid material here in the Nylog. So what I've got here to demonstrate is I've got a beaker. I've got a magnetic stir. And what this does is I have a magnet here. Place it in there. And the magnet, and there's a motor underneath that spins it. Okay, most people will get that. Now what I've got here is some PoE oil. I'm gonna pour it up, about 100 ml. And Let's put that aside. Let me turn this here to where it's clear. Okay, I'm gonna start stirring. Start adding Nylog to the POE. And it dissolves right in. Now, the amount of Nylog I'm adding in is hundreds and hundreds of thousands of times more than you'd ever get into a system, considering this is only 100 ml. And we continue to put Nylog in, and it continues to just dissolve right in to solution without any hesitation. Okay, that's about, oh, I'd say about close to 15 grams in 100 grams of POE oil. Okay, now what I've got here is filter paper, funnel, and one of the complaints is, well, Nylog's going to clog a strainer. Well, let's see what happens. This is
and
very,
just so
very
you know,
fine
John, can you hear me, John?
Yes.
I can't see what you're doing right now because live video stopped just because there's a signal issue. The live video stopped, but it's still recording in the background. So just keep your descriptions with your words flowing. Oh, there you are. You're back now. So okay, so continue.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this solution that I just doused with Nylog, take a very close look. It's crystal clear. I am going to now see if it passes through filter paper. And we see that it has, I'm going to fish out this magnet. And if you can see that, it is passing through the filter paper, no problem whatsoever. Even though it has almost 15% Nylog in that POE.
So, I mean, we've had discussions about Nylog online tons of times, and there's still a ton of people that don't know about it because if a post goes semi-viral and gets like 50,000 to 100,000 views, you get the comments like, why would you put glue on that? Like, you know what I mean? You don't put leak lock on. Like, people are still confusing it with leak lock. And how would you address the misconceptions of Nylog and what people are attempting to say it can do to a system? As far as, I mean, you just showed us, and I said, we'll see that video in post-production because I lost the live feed, but you just showed us how it homogenizes with oil and how it's not getting stuck in the filter. So, I mean, all the misconceptions you've heard, how do we ease the pain a little bit as far as Nylog not being an issue within a refrigeration system?
Certainly. Well, one of the first rules of refrigeration that I learned was that you never put anything on a gasket or thread except oil, and preferably the compressor oil that's in that compressor system. So with Nylog, we don't break any of the rules because we are just putting POE oil on a fitting, a gasket, an O-ring, etc. We're using it as an assembly lubricant. And people are kind of leery because they see the viscosity and the stickiness. Well, that's just because they don't get it. It's just oil. It's been thickened and does not contain any solid particles that are going to interfere with any refrigeration flow or lubrication issues because it is basically the same oil that is in your compressor system. So that's about as explicit as I can get Most contractors get it. Some don't. And that's just the story of our trade.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. Some contractors aren't willing to go out and test things for themselves. And that's the sad part, because once you start testing things for yourself, you know if they work and you know if they don't, and you don't have to make, I guess you don't have to make an assumption of whether it works or it doesn't based on an opinion. So, I mean, anybody that's out there listening, I mean, if you just try it, you'll understand where the hype is and what John is talking about. And he's just shown you here. So I will post a video of that at some point. Okay. So I appreciate that demo, John.
This is a simple test anybody can do. You don't need laboratory equipment or anything. You can just put some PoE in a cup and then start adding Nilog to it and give it a little stir to break it up a little bit. And we will see that there is no residue. Everything has filtered through. I will return all this Nilog back into the original. And I don't know if you can see that, but it is all there. It all returns back.
Perfect. Awesome. Okay. Do you guys want to move on? I want to ask, maybe John, if you can shut your camera off, if you can, because I think it might be slowing down. I just want to make sure our audio recording is good and we'll move on. Perfect. Awesome. So I got all you guys here and I want to first get Ashley's take on running a chemical company, but making the switch from capacitors over to being involved with chemicals. First off, congratulations on the job. And how are things, how's the transition going for you?
Well, first and foremost, thanks. The transition has been great. You know, it's still the same group of people that I'm really talking to. It was really just kind of learning a new product. But thankfully, this product is very easy to speak about. And I feel like already has a really good following. So that makes it even easier. I feel like most people are familiar with Viper, or they are from, you know, they know the snake can. So that makes this a lot easier for me for a transition.
Yeah, for sure. And I notice in your videos, you've been brought up to date. I'm sure these guys, John and Mike, have helped you, but on your own fruition too, just brought yourself up to speed on all these chemicals and stuff and how they work, coil cleaners and all that. So I'm sure you've learned a lot in the last couple of months, just digging
Absolutely.
In, just digging in, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's every day you learn something new, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's with anybody in the industry. There's always new things happening, new things coming out. Obviously the first, you know, it's been just over 2 months since I've started with them. So, you know, I'm still definitely learning things, but I feel like I have, you know, the good meat and potatoes so far of the products and how to speak about them.
Perfect. So let's talk about coil cleaning, and I'll bring you in on this, Mike, initially. So this is my position on coil cleaning, because I've cleaned coils for 25 years. I've been on roofs for 2 months cleaning coils on the same roof because it had 150 rooftops on it. I've cleaned little condenser coils. I've cleaned giant 100-ton condenser coils. And my opinion is this, and you guys may not agree off the bat, but this is my opinion. I was always taught to clean a coil opposite to airflow because you're going to push dirt out. But what I found through the years is that it doesn't matter which way you clean that coil, as long as it's clean when it's done, it's clean. Clean is clean. And I mean, anytime I clean a coil online and the hose is pointing towards the front of the coil, I always get the comment, "You're doing it wrong." And I'm like, well, at the end, it's still clean. It's as clean as if you did it the other way. And one of the things I said, let me show you two clean coils. I'm going to tell you one was clean from the inside out and one was clean from the outside in. You tell me which one was cleaned in which way. You're never going to know if it's fully clean. So, Mike, I'm going to start you off. First off, what do you think of that opinion? And then I want to ask you some questions about coil cleaners.
Yeah, I agree. I think a clean coil is a clean coil. But as far as, you know, how fast do you want to get that coil clean and move on to the next job, there may be a better method of cleaning that coil as compared to, you know, just going from the outside. So, you know, going from the outside, you have the ability to, you know, push more dirt into the fins and potentially clog some spaces. Because most of the dirt and debris lives on the outside of the coil, right? So correct, if you're cleaning it from the inside out, it's going to be a little easier to push that dirt out. So I would just say for efficiency, and trying to get in as many jobs in the day as possible, you know, going from inside out is going to be, you know, the quickest method.
Okay. My technique is to hold the washer in a downward pattern, in a downward fashion, so it actually pushes all the dirt downwards. And I'm going to say I agree with you if the coil is like 4 or 5 inches thick, because I've cleaned coils that's 4 or 5 inches thick and dirt can get lodged right in the middle. But for a residential coil that's like a half inch thick, I've never had a problem cleaning it from the outside. And then having, maybe if you got to pull the fan off, because what I do is I'll take all the leaves and stuff out, right? All the leaves, all the dirt, and I'll wash that out the base. And if I go from the outside, I just find it faster because I'm getting all the dirt and I'm pushing it down. And if there's any that goes on the inside, I'll wash it out. But we're not going to sit here and debate all day which way. I just have an opinion in it from my experience, and I'd be interested to hear what John says on this. John, what's your opinion on that?
So Wise Hire is a platform that was developed on the thinking that, hey, we need to find the right people for our business. Where do we find them? So Wise Hire, basically you can create a very quick ad to find potential or talent. And then they have people, experts, that will optimize your ad to search out that potential or talent at a higher level. So if you're interested and you can't find the right people for your business, check out wisehire.com, because who knows, they could be able to help you out. Chirp is an automated platform that's deeply integrated into all the main CRM tools. And what it's for is to stay in touch with your customers through the year when you're not physically working on their sites, right? So we can create campaigns that have reminders to change filters, to do maintenance, to replace systems, anything of the sort, right? Follow up on quotes, follow up on invoices. And we do this automated, so we're not always having to be picking up the phone and texting or email or sending out messages to people, right? It's all automated. Stay in touch with your customer base. You keep top of mind for repairs and install work. And that's it, guys. Check out chirp.com. So Yellow Jacket has manufactured a hose what has a left-handed thread on one end and a left-handed thread fitting, or a fitting adapter to go on a regular hose. The reason for this, and this is a charging hose that it connects up to a cylinder, like a charging cylinder. Apparently, R32 and R454A are going to be adopting a left-handed thread on their cylinder. So you need a specific charging hose or fitting with a left-handed thread to attach to it. So that's why they've developed it. I don't know if this is going to happen globally or just in certain parts of the world. I'm not entirely sure, but they've got the hose available and the fitting if you come across a left-handed thread.
My opinion is, if you can get your solution to punch through the coil, it doesn't matter which way you inject it, inside out, outside in, as long as you're punching through the coil, you're good. Now, as you mentioned, you're working with coils 5, 6, 7 inches thick. You have no other alternative but to hit it from both directions, because you're probably not going to get all the way through doing it either inside outside or outside inside, because of the way the coil is, the fin pack is arranged. So, mm-hmm. You know,
that's a really good point about the, yeah. Sorry, go on. I'll get to my point in a second.
So it's, every job is going to be simple. I mean, different. If you spend 10 minutes on cleaning a coil, you're probably not going to get it clean as if you spent 30 minutes on cleaning a coil. But you're up on a roof with 150 units. I'm going outside in as long as I could punch through, because it's not worth the time or effort really to disassemble the fan section to get through and do it from the inside out.
Mm-hmm. So that's the point you made about having a cleaner that gets and penetrates all the dirt, I think is an important one, because if that cleaner gets in, it penetrates, it breaks down the dirt. Once that water hits it, that dirt is going to flow downwards, especially if you're pointing the hose or the nozzle downwards. So, I mean, it's a really good point that you brought up. And actually, I'm going to bring this to you. There's a lot of equipment out there that is labeled, do not use chemicals on this coil. But you guys, in fact, make a cleaner that is microchannel safe, because most of these labels, you see them on microchannels. And I didn't know this. I didn't even know this term existed until a few months ago, until I looked it up. And it was aqueous detergent. And I mean, do you want to maybe collectively, or Ashley, you can start this off. Aqueous detergent, like, is that a chemical? Is it alkaline? Is it acid? Or is it just like almost as simple as a detergent you would wash things with, if you're washing dishes or clothing or whatever? You want to tackle that one, Ashley?
Well, so aqueous just means that it contains water.
Okay.
But the reality is I think most people just aren't paying attention to what's in each of the cleaners. And that's really the problem, right? So you've got a lot of cleaners out there that are going to be made from corrosive materials. And I can let John or Mike speak to like the specific names of those materials, but it'll say on the product, you know, I've been talking a lot about safety labels lately. But there will be a label on that product that has a corrosive symbol that will tell you like, this is not safe for microchannel, because every time you use this product, it is going to take a layer of that metal off. So that's obviously bad. You know, we don't want to be causing damage to the coil while we're cleaning it. So being mindful of the product that you're using is really important. So yes, our condenser cleaner is microchannel and aluminum safe.
So Mike, you want to just elaborate on that? And because it's always the argument, well, you can't put anything on that coil. And I always say, well, you know what? McDonald's says the coffee is hot. Because you have people that will actually go out and put dangerous things on their coils and not understand exactly what they're doing. And I think the manufacturers are putting a blanket statement on that because they don't necessarily trust what people will put on it. Just like when McDonald's says the coffee is hot, they want to make sure that they're not going to get sued because somebody spills their coffee on them, even though they know when they buy it, it's supposed to be hot and they want it to be hot. I don't know. Maybe just elaborate on the whole thing about the chemical makeup of some of the coil cleaners you have.
So that's exactly what it is. It's a blanket statement. You know, because if you look at the sea of coil cleaners out there and what's available, the majority of them are going to be toxic. They're going to be corrosive, like Ashley said. They're going to have, you know, some pretty hardcore symbols on the back that are denoting, you know, some hazards. They're going to be extremely alkaline and corrosive with hydroxides. They're going to be acids that are going to burn you. So it's very easy for a manufacturer to just make a statement and say, hey, look, just don't use anything, because they're not going to spend time going out and vetting the coil cleaning market and then starting to really dive in with manufacturers like us and start approving things because they don't want to take the risk. So, you know,
and that takes them tons of time and tons of money to go through every coil cleaner on the market and approve it. I mean, who's got the time and the money to do this, right?
Right. So we're hearing don't use any coil cleaners, just use water. And we're also hearing don't use anything above a certain pH or below a certain pH, which is another just standard blanket statement. So if you figure a neutral pH is not going to be acid or alkaline, so they're basically saying don't use anything corrosive. But there are plenty of coil cleaners out there that are on the higher end of the pH scale that are non-corrosive. And that's kind of where a lot of the Viper coil cleaners live, is we're able to use some pretty great chemistry in order to make these high-performing chemicals be on the upper end of the pH scale, which helps deliver this aqueous, you know, detergent solution to the coil without having any of the bad side effects of, you know, burning yourself shaving aluminum off, just the really bad degradation of the coil you get over time when using these very caustic products. So, and that's really the playground that we live in. We want to be different than everyone else, and we provide a solution that, you know, can get the job done without incurring any injury to the individuals using it, the people that are around it after the fact with fumes, and the equipment itself from not losing metal over time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so John, you would be well familiarized with what I'm going to ask you next. What is the process of testing? Because I think that's important. What is the process of testing a coil cleaner to know it's not going to do any damage to a coil? Is this just basic chemistry knowledge, or do you go out and actually test it against different types of metals like aluminum and copper and stuff like that?
Well, you can do a basic corrosion testing in-house, but that's not going to convince any technician out there. What we have done with our coil cleaners is we have sent them to a laboratory in Miami, Florida, that tests cleaners for their suitability for use on aircraft, because aircraft is aluminum, and they are very, very anal about corrosion and removing paint and other things that may be associated with the outside of the airplane, such as the acrylic windows. So we sent our coil cleaners to be tested for their suitability for cleaning as aircraft equipment. And if you pass that test, you can pass any coil test. So, you know, if anybody cares to go to our website on all our coil cleaners, except the Viper Bright, which we don't recommend for using on aluminum, there is a laboratory report that will state that it does not corrode aluminum. It does not affect clear acrylic plastic. It does not affect paint. So you can use it on coils that are coated. So it's a matter of, don't take the manufacturer's word for it. Take the word of an independent laboratory who has conducted the proper testing on that particular cleaner. And if I could just get into just a little bit, the OEMs are really not competent at cleaning coils or recommending what to use for cleaning coils, because most of them say just use water. Well, tap water contains chlorine, and chlorine is not friendly to aluminum. So repeated washings with chlorinated water, even though it's very low chlorinated water, that causes a condition known as hydrogen embrittlement, which will eventually corrode your aluminum coil. So the suggestion just use water was not ill-advised. And they'll say, okay, we'll use something like Dawn or dishwashing, something mild. Well, Dawn contains salt. Most of your cheaper cleaners, household cleaners, contain salt. So you certainly don't want to clean your coils, your aluminum microchannels, with a salt solution. And then rinse it with chlorinated tap water. So the OEMs really have to revisit this issue and start approving coil cleaners that have the testing behind it. That's all we're asking for.
Mm-hmm. No, it makes a lot of sense, and I totally get it. I've been involved with a lot of things that people say don't use in a system or on a system. And the testing's all been done, but the OEMs still haven't gotten behind it because they haven't done their own testing yet. And who knows if they ever will. So I understand the position you're taking and the position you're in on that. I know you guys don't have all day, so maybe we can switch that. Actually, I want to ask you one question, John, and then I'm going to switch it to leak checking. You mentioned Bright. Can you maybe verify the difference between Bright and the other coil cleaners you're talking about? What is, you said you don't recommend it for aluminum. Why is that?
Well, as Ashley mentioned earlier, that it takes a layer of aluminum off. We don't like to recommend using our brightener as a go-to coil cleaner. We feel that and most technicians use brightener as a go-to cleaner. But we're trying to educate the technician into using the safer, non-corrosive chemicals that can do just as good a job. It'll get the coil clean. It just won't remove that layer of aluminum and make it look pretty and shiny. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's any cleaner than using a standard detergent to clean a coil.
So what would you recommend the bright for then?
I would only recommend the bright for extremely neglected coils, coils that have been out there in the field that have picked up a lot of grease. I don't know. I used to do, when I was a contractor, I used to take care of a family that owned like four different hamburger shops. And I mean, the only time they call me out is when their condensers were completely plugged with grease, you know, and usually it's because the health department shut them down. And, you know, that is probably restaurants, heavy industrial areas where there's high amount of grease, sticky substance in the air. Chinese restaurants, Japanese restaurants, where they're cooking with soy sauces and the soy sauce gets, the vapors get into that coil and just attach to the coil fins like epoxy glue. You know, the brightener has its purpose.
Okay. All right. So thank you for clarifying that. We're going to, I want to take this conversation. How long do you guys have? Do you guys have another 20 minutes?
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Okay. So coil cleaning, leak checking. This is another one that I get a lot of comments about that I shake my head on. And there's a lot of people that put down, you guys sell Big Blue. I mean, but you still recommend for a technician to use an electronic leak detector. I mean, it would make more sense as a business if you guys said, yeah, just soap everything, right? And go through like three bottles of soap per unit and then come buy more of my soap. But you guys recommend an electronic coil cleaner, which is, I believe, the right thing to do. Ashley, I want to get your take on this. I know you're new to this side of the business, but Mike and John and myself have agreed in the past that taking an electronic, a good one that has good quality, finding your leak, right? And then taking the soap and verifying that you have some bubbles at that point in time after you verified it. What do you think about that? I mean, you're not selling as much soap, but the technician is not creating a mess around the entire system with all that soap if they were using soap only.
Yeah, I mean, I think this company's premise is always like, do the right thing, right? Like, it's not necessarily, do we want to sell things? Obviously, but we don't need you to soak your entire unit with bubbles. It's always about doing it the right way. And making sure the job is done properly. So, I mean, use it as a tool, not as the end all be all, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, how many bottles of Big Blue are you guys filling a day? Ashley, do you know that question? Because it's a very popular leak soap. And I want to maybe you guys actually describe it as a leak detector, not a leak soap. Ashley, you want to maybe talk to that for a second?
I have no idea how many we sell. I know it's a lot. I'm not sure.
Big number.
So I'll pitch in here, Gary. Run our fill line 4 to 5 days a week of various items. Okay. So
yeah,
there's constant product being pushed out. It's awesome. A day in the life of a manufacturer.
Well, you know, something that I have noticed, I'm this is an actual observation, that the suppliers that I go into, the Big Blue section is getting bigger, like over the course of the years. I guess they're ordering more boxes because the section that Big Blue takes up on the shelf, it's a larger part of the shelf, which is a good thing for you guys. But that leak detector comment, rather than soap, do you guys prefer to call the soap mixture a leak detector rather than just soap? Because I mean, it differentiates between the guys that are going out and using Dawn or whatever they're using from Walmart as opposed to a leak detection formula that's made for it, right?
Yeah, I've only known it as leak detector. It's always been like that since John created it back in the 80s. And yeah, we've never really used the word soap too much.
Okay. All right. Ashley, what were you saying there?
I'd say, you know, people identify. Yeah, people identify bubbles with soap, but there's other products that make bubbles and make bubbles that are better than soap. From when I started developing leak detection fluids back in the early 80s. So they've all come a long way. They've all evolved. I prefer to call it a leak detector because it's just a tool. And hopefully it's a tool that contractors continue to rely on for pinpointing leaks.
Mm-hmm. And do you want to, I asked you about this years ago, but there's a certain terminology for how the bubbles kind of break through on each other. And it allows micro bubbles to take place. Do you want to maybe go through how these micro bubbles, because I've sprayed Big Blue on a leak that was so tiny that I had to wait for 10 minutes. And then 10 minutes later, I see this white foam almost coming from the fitting. And if you zoom in with my phone, you can actually see the tiniest little bubbles forming.
Well, certainly. The smaller the leak, the lower the energy behind the leak and the lower the volume of gas behind that leak. So your fluid that you're using, the bubble fluid you're using, has to work in an environment where you have low energy, low environment, low volumes of gas escaping from a small little orifice. And it may only be emitting a small, tiny little bubble, one every 15 to 20 seconds. A bubble so small that you can't see it. And eventually, after 15, 20, 30 minutes, you'll have enough of these small, tiny little, what I call foam cocoons, starting to come up, and you'll be able to see like these white little patches. And that will let you know that you've got a leak there. So we're talking about low energy leaks, low volume leaks. And your detection fluid must have the sensitivity to be able and create envelopes around the low energy, low volume of gas.
So that is something, if you suspect that you have a small leak, or if you suspect that you have a leak somewhere, but you don't know where it is, and your pressure is dropping very, very slowly. Let's say you have nitrogen in the system and you're leak checking that way because you've pulled out the refrigerant and you put nitrogen to raise the pressure. You recommend that spraying the leaks and waiting, or spraying the fittings and waiting for 10 to 15 minutes before you start looking for leaks. And is that a general rule of thumb that you would recommend?
Well, generally throughout their leak checking, you know, you pump up the system to 400 pounds and you're starting to spray joints, you're starting to spray U-bends and components. And while you're doing that, you got to constantly go back and keep observing parts that you've sprayed previously until, you know, you've completed spraying every suspectable spot, and then continue to look back and check all the areas. And so it's a very exhaustive procedure, of course, leak detection, if you have a micro leak. But you got to keep going back and inspecting everything you've sprayed until you actually start seeing some cocoons appear, or even some small clusters of bubbles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been my experience. If you're looking for a small leak, you got to wait and get patient and wait 10, 15 minutes. And I even try to take my finger and I try to like push the soap in some of the joints as well. I mean, I find that kind of helps if I take my finger, especially if the joint is pointing downwards, just kind of take my finger and then push it up into the joint as well is something that I tend to do just out of habit. So I mean, to end this off, I mean, Ashley, you're going through a lot of these safety labels and stuff like that. Is there some safety precautions you can let us know? And I know like a lot of the chemicals that you guys manufacture and sell, that they're food safe and stuff like that, but is there any precautions we need to take when we're using coil cleaners, anything like that, gloves, glasses, anything, just in case?
I mean, I know everyone hates to wear PPE, but I would always recommend it just because you never know.
Yeah.
Especially when you're working with anything that is labeled a bright or is corrosive. I think also another thing that people neglect to do is reading labels. Check out the back. You know, the labels are pretty prominent on the products that you guys are using. And if you pay attention and know what those labels are, you'll be in a lot better position than just kind of going buck wild with some chemicals. But for the most part, it's honestly just education, right?
Yeah. No, education is important. I have a funny story about that, actually. So when I first started in the trade, the guy that owned the company I worked for, he would send the dispatcher out on jobs sometimes to help. And we used to get these big, huge, I don't even know where we got them from. They were big, huge buckets of very acidic coil cleaner. And then we'd pour a little bit in a pump sprayer and fill it with water and mix it. And the dispatcher, one time he sat down on it was a 5-gallon pail, and he sat down on the bucket, but there was a little bit of remnants of this acid sitting on top. It went through his pants, and it was burning his ass so bad that he had to drop his pants on the roof, and the apprentice was spraying his ass with water to try to relieve the pain he was feeling from the acid. So, I mean, education on what you're using and what you're going to touch is super important, right? As you were saying.
Absolutely. There's some scary stuff out there. And I think people don't realize how caustic and corrosive some of the products are. And then also, if you're using something that's corrosive and you're out in the sun, it's going to make it that much worse, right? So you got to burn, and then you're, you know, in the summer out on a rooftop and the sun is beating on it. And then some of the chemicals actually react to water as well. So you really do have to be cautious. I will say though, that once somebody gets burned or seen someone get burned, they're usually a lot more perceptive to what they're using.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Common sense. It's one of the things I always say. People say use common sense. I'm like, well, what if that sense to them isn't very common in their part of their life, right? Common sense to me is something that you need to be trained and learned so that sense is now common to you and whoever you're around. That's just kind of my little definition on common sense. I don't believe it's a thing until you're trained up on that specific thing. Could you agree with that statement, Ashley?
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially anybody who might be new or, you know, doing something new, you don't know what you don't know. So you have to kind of be immersed in it and be aware. Common sense isn't really common anymore, right?
That's right. And until we get the training, then hopefully it's retained in your brain. So, I mean, I'll give Mike and John their last words here. And Mike, I did want to ask you, I did want to have a bit of a conversation on running a manufacturing business in the HVAC space. I mean, I know it's something that you guys are a family business. You take it very serious, and you run it like a family business. You can tell the way that you guys create your products, talk about your products, and put yourselves forward out there in the trade. But I mean, in the background, things that we don't see on a day-to-day that the technicians wouldn't even dream to think about, like if something's on back order, if you guys are waiting on certain raw materials to make things that you need to put out to fulfill orders, like what are a couple of things that we may not know that you find a hassle on a day-to-day that we kind of need to understand as techs?
Well, I think we run into a lot of the same issues you guys run into, where you're reliant on someone else to have something for you at a certain time, and can you trust them whether they're going to deliver that or not? You know, for us, that's raw materials. It could be chemical, it could be caps, it could be bottles, it could be sprayers, labels. And then for you guys, it would be, you know, equipment and parts and pieces. And, you know, we know what's been going on over the last few years with supply chain issues. I made it a point to be very diligent about forecasting and planning. And I would say that we've done a very good job at retaining stock and partnering up with our vendors that are honest and can supply stuff in a reasonable amount of time. And our back orders have been minimal. We've had hardly any impact to sales at all. We continue to grow at a very, very rapid rate. And yeah, this is
nice.
All the stuff on the outside that everyone sees, the finished product, that's the really cool, fun stuff. But there's a million things and a million steps that happened before that got to the wholesaler and onto the technician's van. And that's all those, you know, like I was saying, that's, you know, ordering every cap and every bottle and every sprayer and label and, you know, the 10 different chemicals or 20 different chemicals that may go into a formulation. Machinery has got to be running right. You got to have redundant machines. We have multiple labelers just in case a labeler goes down. We have belts and parts and valves and pumps that are sitting waiting in case we got to plug those in. Multiple types of tanks, multiple mixers. Yeah, there's a lot of things that go on. It's fun. You know, I like to get her about an hour earlier before everyone, just because I need a little peace and quiet to get some things done. But, you know, sure, you know, it's every day, of course, you have someone that walks in and says, you know, this is broken, I need help, and, you know, this is not working right, we need to fix this. And you know, those are the little things that people don't see. But I'm very lucky that I get to do a lot of things here. So I get to work not only on the, you know, the business and the operation side, but I get to work with, you know, our sales team. I get to work with, you know, marketing. I get to work with Ashley a lot, social media. So I get to be creative. I get to be technical. I get to be mechanical. So it's fun. My job is a blast. I really love coming in here every day.
Mike's good to know. Jack of all trades.
The jack of all trades.
Mike of all trades.
you're the mic of all trades. But then there's like that master of none thing, but we're not going to include that part of the statement when we talk about Mike, right?
We can say master of some.
He's the master of some.
There you go. That's a better one. Okay, John, I mean, you started this whole thing. I mean, it started years ago with your big blue formula and you wanted to find something for yourself that would be a better formula for leak detection than what was out there. So I want to give you the floor to end this off and address the industry in any way you would like, whether it be about one of your products that people have misconceptions on or something that you're passionate about within this industry. So you got the floor. I mean, you can end this off for us.
Well, probably what I'm most passionate about is bringing the competent level of technicians out there could gradually keep the competent level improving. The more competent our workforce is out there, the more credibility it gives to our trade. And it's that professionalism that would demand respect from the customers. We like to put out lots of educational material when we sell our products in our marketing. And, you know, we've teamed up with some good people like Brian Orr and his school and, of course, yourself, always looking for the correct way of doing things. And we feel that, you know, the products that we put out are educating people on the correct way of doing the type of service that they need to conduct out there every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what differentiates you guys between other competitors in the same space, is that you, John, are a technician in the trade, and you're also a chemist. So you can put those, both of those minds together and really understand both sides and be very, you can understand them. The word I'm looking for is, I guess you can be empathetic, to the industry and understand what technicians in the field are going through. And that helps you create products that they're going to enjoy and like. So, I mean, that's kind of a great way to end this off. And I mean, thank you guys very much for your time today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Gary.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us on.
Something I wish I could have done back in the day is record these conversations that I used to have with like product reps and technical support and even counter people. Cause I've always tried to dig deep and be super curious about things. And now that they are recorded and I listen, I'm like, man, I wish I could have recorded my conversations back then. Cause this is what it's all about. It's listening and asking and retaining knowledge a little bit better, and then passing this knowledge on to the folks in this trade that want to learn and want to dig deep. Because if you're listening to a podcast on your free time, driving to work or wherever you are, that means you're trying to learn. And that's very genuine of you to learn in that fashion about this industry that we're in. So anyway, thank you to Mike. Thank you to John. Thank you to Ashley once again for getting on here and helping, keeping us informed and educated. Happy HVAC, and I'm out.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Follow HVAC Know-It-All on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, and anywhere else Gary feels like popping up. This has been a Two Smokes and a Coffee production.